Thank you very much, Pat. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a privilege to be here. And I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I know that, and this is going to be sort of like step 8 and 9, somewhere around there. We'll figure this thing out, and then I'm gonna mush a couple together so I can fit into the schedule. I'll do 10 and 11 next week. Now, I know I did step 12 last week, right? Yeah, because that was on purpose, you know. I'm doing the steps at a group called the Sable Palm Group, a wonderful group in Miami, and I was on step 12, and I somehow, because I just turned 63 yesterday, so that's not done for applause or anything. I had nothing to do with it. I just stayed alive, you know, and I managed not to die. And, you know, if you don't die, you know, you get there, you know. And so I didn't do anything special. I just didn't kill myself or get run over. And so you managed to get to that point. So I was 63. But, you know, what happens is, I guess, you know, I'm not as well as I used to be. And I just somehow thought I got this group mixed up with the Sable Palm Group, although you're obviously a much, much better looking group and sharper and... And I thought I was on step 12, so I did their meeting. You got their meeting. So, but it's, if you missed it, I think it's recorded. I think it's on rocketed.org or something like that. So in any event, so I'm going to sort of like back. So we're going to do the steps backwards now. Did it forward. We're going to go backwards. I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience. That's all I can talk about. I can't talk about your deal. And you know, what do they say? They say, hey, it's like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And I don't know whether I'm going to be a wrench or you're going to get anything out of it. I'm just going to try to be honest and share, you know, what the step means to me today. At 63 years of age, with a little over 31 years of sobriety, what this step means to me now. You know, I'm not sure I can remember what this step meant to me, like when I had 2 months or, you know, it didn't mean much. You know, I came in here like most people come in confused. I had no idea. You know, you have no idea what they're talking about in here. This stuff is so, this is like, you know, reading hieroglyphics. You know, I had no idea what they're talking about. You know, how can anybody understand this stuff? This stuff goes so against what my deal is all about, the way I want to do things. How could you ever even understand this stuff and look at this stuff and see it? But luckily for me, it says, don't rob an alcoholic of his desperation. Luckily for me, I came in here desperate. I came in here with, as I said, 2 neurons working, and they were waving goodbye at each other. So, you know, when you come in here and you're just beat into a pulp and your life becomes a bottle and it's totally unmanageable, even though you don't understand everything, you're actually in a great position, because God forbid you're in a position where you actually can put a sentence together, where you can actually argue with somebody. I wasn't well enough to argue, and so that was a great thing for me, because I was just lucky there was a place I could go and feel somewhat safe. And so for that period of time that you're getting here before you get smart again and start thinking, I had that brief period of time in here where I was so scared and so stupid and so crazy and so much thought I was 31 years old and my life was over, that I didn't argue much. I just did what I was told. You know, it didn't matter how many degrees I had or how smart I thought I was. I was just helpless, hopeless. And I suppose probably back then I might have even been humble, although I don't even want to claim that, you know. But I actually do believe, and this is going to be, I don't know whether it's hard to explain, so I'm just going to tell you how I feel. I believe I was at my best the night I picked up my white chip. As far as whatever humility looks like, and whatever total willingness and total teachability looks like, I believe I was at my best the night I knew absolutely nothing, didn't know the steps, didn't know anything. And I was in the back of the room, didn't know anybody in here, in a group that was probably about this size, you know, a pretty large group, you know. So, you know, you can imagine, you know, I lived my whole life, getting degrees and getting diplomas and doing all that stuff and trying to put up a front, you know, and all that sort of thing, and not let anybody know that I had a problem. Imagine in a group of people, large group of people, in the back of the room where I stood up and I walked to the front of the room in front of these people, essentially, And you know how they do it. They say, is there anybody who's, I mean, it's pretty clear. That was pretty clear. Is there anybody, it's like for new people. They pick up this white chip. It's like for new people. It's like for people that, you know, aren't part of the organization, don't know any, it's almost like you're declaring, I know nothing. I don't, and you know what else it is? And this is what was clear to me. It's like you're declaring that you need help. Can you imagine that? I was 31 years old. I was an attorney. I was a former prosecutor. And there was this group of people I didn't even know. And I was sitting in the back of the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stood up and I walked to the front of the room and I knew I was asking all these people, I was telling all these people I need help. And here's the crazy part about it. I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about it. You know, I wasn't, thank God, I wasn't well enough to even think about it. Because if I was well enough, whatever alcoholic well is, you know what I mean? I don't know what alcoholic well is. I'll put it this way. If I was strong enough, thank God I was in a weakened state. You know, there's a line from, I think, Corinthians where the apostle Paul says that he was given this thorn. And he never says what the thorn is, but he says it's satanic. Now, real religious people will say something like he was nearsighted, you know. But what he says is that he says it's a satanic thing. It was killing him. For all I know, it could have been alcoholism. It could have been drug addiction. It could have been lust. It could have been anything. He says, I asked God 3 times to remove it, and he wouldn't. And what God said to the Apostle Paul, he says, I will not take this from you, lest you become conceited, because when you're weak, I'm strong, but my grace will be sufficient for you. My power will be sufficient for you, essentially one day at a time, which is exactly what happens here. You know, when I'm at my weakest, all I do is focus on him. All I do is look to him. All I do is apparently listen to the right people, and I do the right thing. God help me when I get strong and full of myself. And, you know, I could believe in God. God help me when I get totally self-reliant. And I think I got the world by the hoosets. That's when I'm hurting people and stepping on toes. You know what I mean? So it's this dichotomy in AA that's kind of hard to explain and live with, but it's one of the mysteries that I'm at my best when I feel I need him the most and I'm at my most powerless. And I'm always, on the other hand, striving to gain control and power because of fear. Because when you're afraid, you have to have control. Because if you don't have total control, you're going to get hurt. You got to have control of people, of the universe, of what people think about you. You got to know, you got to be aware, you got to be up all the time, you got to be drinking, you got to have control. And of course, the sad thing is, of course, for me is, and so you guys probably don't even realize this, that for many years I actually controlled the entire universe. And it didn't work out. I know you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but you know, you ever try to control people, control traffic? You know, I'm thinking to myself of a time when I used to drive in my car in Miami, when the traffic wasn't even as bad as it is right now, and I would be thinking over and over again, almost habitually, that I had a machine gun in my car. This is like 27, 28, 29, 30 years old, not a kid, you know what I mean, with a responsible position. And thinking of blowing up cars in front of me. In my mind, I was blowing up cars. Hard to believe that an individual with that kind of thought process and a certain degree of intelligence and a responsible job would actually have difficulties in relationships. Hard to understand that I didn't just get along with everybody, you know what I mean? And I didn't have, like, grudges and misunderstandings and, you know what is Marlon Brando says? He said, if I go to a party and there's 300 people and there's somebody there that I don't that has a grudge against me or doesn't like me, I have to leave. I talked about this last week. You know, a lot of this stuff, I was talking to a pastor I know. You know, I hang around these pastors. I like to hang around these guys. You know, I was talking to Andy. How much time do you have now?
21.
21, okay. And Andy was saying to me, he says, you know, the longer I'm sober, the more I want to be at meetings and I want to hang around people. And it says God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know, isn't it funny? When I first came in, I was trying to figure out how to do as little as possible. You know, because, you know, because we worry a lot about balance. I mean, this A thing is good, you know, and God is good, but you don't want to get it out of hand because, you know, I got important things to do, you know. And, you know, maybe I can hone it, you know. I told my sponsor once, I said, I had that 2 or 3 months where I was so scared and I was so, you know, I just followed directions that I did. And it was enough time so that I got a lot of stuff together that I would have questioned, okay? I would have questioned. But you see, what happens is when you're drowning, and you're drowning and you're going to die, and somebody throws you a life preserver, you grab the life preserver. You understand what I'm saying? You don't worry about whether it's pink or purple or that it has the word God on it or they're saying the Lord's Prayer. You don't worry about whether it has the Lord's Prayer on it or the Serenity Prayer or any of that stuff because you're dying, so you grab at anything. You understand? But when you're not dying and they throw you a life preserver, you say, wait a second. This has the Serenity Prayer on it. Wait a second, you know. But you see, you like sort of debate with your mind. And if you know anything about alcoholism, you know that the alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. Alcoholics drink because they're sober, because sobriety is the problem. Because, like I said, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. We're restless, irritable, discontented, and 1,000 other things you can add on to that. Unless we're going to get an experience of severe discomfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Or by having a love affair, or by stalking some gal, or, you know, whatever, or by buying a blouse, or spending money on a car that you can't afford, you know, to impress people you don't like, or doing, you add anything you do in your life, anything you do that you absolutely don't need to do, but you do it to make yourself feel better. That's part of alcoholism too, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm concerned at this point in my life, somebody was asking me, I drive a 12-year-old car. He said, well, you know, you ought to get a new car. I said, why would I do that? I said, you don't understand. Like some people, he says, you don't understand. I lived a life where besides the booze, I all I did was think about getting a new car or a new girlfriend or a new something. I said, you don't understand. One of the things that I value as a release or a new freedom is that I don't have to get a new car. I have no compulsion to get a new car. I don't have a care. I mean, you don't understand. I said, to me, for me to get a new car when my car is still working is like taking a drink. Now, I'm not saying that's the way you have to. I'm not putting down anybody who's got a new car or wants to get a new car. That's fine. But for me, it's like taking a drink. For me to buy something to make myself feel better, because I don't feel good, and I don't want to take it to extremes, you know, because I can't, and I'm not perfect. But you understand what I'm saying. I had my credit cards taken away from me when I was 9 years sober, because apparently I learned that in my 40s that if you spend more money than you make, you know, you go into something called debt. I didn't know that, because I was living a dishonest life. You know, the old story, I spent money I didn't have to buy things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like, because my whole focus was on my feelings, and how I felt was bad thoughts about myself and other people, and I needed to fix it, you know, to get better. And of course, we don't necessarily address this totally in AA. It is addressed in AA, but sort of like undercover, because in AA, it's all about not drinking, right? Until you've been around for a little while and you understand what the real disease is. You know, they don't give you a chip, a medallion. They give you a medallion because you went a year without drinking, or 2 years without drinking, or 3 years without drinking, or 10 years without drinking, or 30 years without drinking. They don't give you a medallion for going 30 years without buying a new car. They don't give you a medallion for going for 30 years, you know, and paying your taxes. They don't give you a medallion for going 30 years and not ditching your old wife for a new wife. Or not, they don't give you a medallion for not, you know, they don't give you a medallion for some of the other stuff we do, which is just as much part of alcoholism, do they? No, they don't do that. But that's the stuff everybody just talks about at discussion meetings. That's the stuff that's really ruining your life. That's the bondage that you're involved. You know, the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. And you know what? One of the dangers of my life now, it's just something I'm aware of, is we all know what denial is. We all know that, you know. I mean, everybody who's been around here for a while, first of all, we were all in it as far as alcohol is concerned, right? We were all in denial. And so we know what that's about. We've experienced denial. And we, if you've been around here long enough, you've been around where you've watched newcomers in their first week, month, 6 months, talk about stuff. And we let them talk about stuff in the meetings, and you know they have no clue. They are clue. They're just talking, you know. And you know they're crazy, but you know, if you're new and you got a month or two, or three or four until you get a sponsor and you've been around for a, we sort of allow you to be crazy. You know, you sort of, you know, they're talking, they think they're talking very wise, important stuff, like, you know, like, you don't understand, I'm okay, I can hang out in the bar and drink Coke, and, you know, we let them do what they have to do until they, you know, drag their tail and they're drunk, and they you know, we do that. But what happens is, one of the dangers is, for me, is you can get a certain amount of time in, maybe it's 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and you think, this is what you think, you say, well, thank God I'm done with the denial stuff. And you know, some, I'll tell you what my deal is. My deal is, you know, there's certain things that I know from living this life and experiencing my life sober and walking through these steps sober while experiencing life. There's certain things I understand about my life that I'm absolutely sure of and I know. And I live my life by that. Certain principles, certain things that I know. But here's the other thing. I also know that there's so much more I don't know. And I'm absolutely sure that I'm in denial right now, sitting here with you, of a whole bunch of things. I know I'm in denial. I know I'm in denial of a whole bunch of things. And probably most of them I can't tell you what they are because I don't know what they are. Because you don't know what you don't know. And it's other stuff. But I can tell you this, the stuff that I'm in denial now, at 31 years of age, I can promise you this, they're the stuff that's, they're the things that are causing me problems. I can promise you, it's the things that are causing me problems. If there's anything that's caused me, and now the good news is, I have far fewer problems and concerns in my life now along the scale than I ever had, okay? Not that I'm problem-free, but I have far less problems, but I promise you this, if I have a problem in my life right now, it's probably because of something I'm in denial about or something I don't want to change. So I was talking to, and Andy was saying to me, to get off, he says, you know, the longer I'm in now, the more I want to hang around meetings and go to meetings. And I said that, to me, that's just a natural thing. You know, and you know, I used to say to my sponsor, you know, when I finally got a little sober, 3 or 4 months or whatever under my belt, and I started thinking, I remember telling my first sponsor, I said, I don't think I have to go to meetings. I was trying to figure out how not to get too involved in this thing because, you know, because it's crazy, you know, because Alcoholics Anonymous is crazy. You know, I mean, you know, I would ask my sponsor, I would say, I need money, I can't pay the mortgage, and he'd say, I think it's time for you to make coffee. How can you hang around the place like this? You know, I mean, I need money, he's talking about coffee or sponsoring somebody. You know, it's like not even reality. I don't even know how it works. I'd make the coffee and the money would appear. I have no idea. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. I know you have to do stuff and everything would work out if I made the coffee. But so I said to my sponsor, I said, I was trying to figure out stuff. You know, you're trying, because what do you do? What is, you know what the A, B's, and C's are? Here they are. They say, we're alcoholic and we can't manage our own lives, right? By the way, it says, being convinced of these things. Being convinced of these things. Every meeting you go to, it says the same thing, being convinced of these things. The first thing is, we're alcoholic and we can't manage our own lives. So for the next 20 years, what you do is try to figure out how you can manage your life. That's what you'll do. That's what you'll be doing. You'll be doing. I'm not saying I'm totally over it. You know what I mean? But that's what we do. We spend the next 20 years mouthing those words, believing those words, nodding those words, and then go out and figuring out, how can I fix this one? How can I fix this guy? How can I make this work? How can I get this money? How can I make this? Managing your life. And having all sorts of problems doing it until you get to your next meeting and says, well, you're an alcoholic. You can't manage your own life. You say, yeah, I can't manage. And yeah, but that's what we have that. It's like being right-handed. You always want to use your right hand. You know, I mean, you can mouth the words, you don't manage your own life. You can think the thought, you can't manage your own life. You might even have an epiphany and say, you know, I really can't manage my own life. And then you walk right outside and you manage your life. It's just like drinking. It's like me waking up one day and saying, I'm not going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm drinking. I'm not going to go to the bar today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm in a bar. I couldn't stop. I'm not going to think today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm thinking. I'm not going to get mad. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm getting mad. I'm not going to stick my nose in that. It's none of my business. By 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm making phone calls and sending emails. What's the difference? I'm not using the booze. It's the same deal. It's the same compulsive, obsessive, I just can't do this thing because of my alcohol. It's part of alcoholism. I mean, the alcoholism really begins after you stop drinking. right? Because, you know, you don't really experience alcoholism full force when you're drinking, because what alcohol is it's our cure. No woman, no amount of money, no car, no anything for me worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And that's why I drank it. I drank it because I couldn't stand being sober. I mean, sure, there were good times, bad times, everything, but all in all, sobriety to me means bad feelings about myself and other people for a million different things, which I'm not going to really get into totally right now, but the bottom line is that's why I use alcohol. So once I, you know, and I never really experienced the full force of alcoholism, because when it starts, when I start getting bored or restless or irritable or jealous or whatever, or me, how about me, just me, when I start thinking, okay, when I'm, here's what I need, you know what I drank because I was awake. When I'm awake, okay? I say things like this. I need a drink. What did Dr. O say about taking pills? I think I told you that one day. I was at a meeting. He was saying, the guy who wrote Alcoholic Addict, Dr. Alcoholic Addict, he said he used to write himself his own scripts, you know, and he says, I never wrote myself a prescription. Never. For a pill or a controlled substance where I didn't exhibit the exact symptoms that controlled substance was for. And then he paused and he said, well, I either had them or I felt them coming on. So that's what I used booze for. I used booze so I would never feel them coming on. So now you come in here and now I'm 9 months sober. And you know what happens when you're 9 months sober. It's like that guy who called me up on the phone that I sponsored. He called me up on the phone and he says, he was like 8 months sober or something like that. And he says, Russ, and he loved Alcoholics Anonymous and solved a lot of his problems. But then he was worried, he says, because he was driving sober and he was going nuts. And he called me up and he says, Russell, he says, I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic. I think I may just be crazy. I said, Tommy, you can be both. He said, really? He thought he had to leave. You know what I mean? Because he was experiencing alcoholism, not being able to sleep. Your mind going a million miles per hour, bad thoughts about this, bad thoughts. He was experiencing alcoholism full force, and it had nothing to do with alcohol. It had to do with his brain ganging up on him. And he said he thought maybe he had to leave. Maybe he was an alcoholic. Maybe he was just nuts. I said, no, you can be both. I said, I didn't tell him the truth. Truth is, this is, so because you realize the truth. Now you say to yourself, now I know why I drank. Now you know why. So how are you going to get rid of that deal? You know, the A, manager, how are you going to get rid of the manager? No human power could have restored, relieved my alcoholism. Always looking for somebody or something human, something to relieve your alcoholism, whether it be a car, whether it be a woman, whether it be a man, husband, wife, child, whatever, to relieve that codependency. That's what Bill Wilson said. The next frontier, emotional sobriety. The real problem is unhealthy dependencies on other people to make us feel good, who are always going to let us down, not necessarily because they're bad, because they're people. And then we get to the back of the book where it says, and if I'm repeating myself, I want to. I was with, we're talking about how you want to go to more meetings. You know, every once in a while people ask me what meetings I go to. I mean, this morning at 9:30, I go to a meeting every Saturday morning where the meeting lasts about an hour and a half. I tend to go to these meetings, they last, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, I don't know what it is, but I go to these meetings, they're different, and then after meetings we all go out to lunch, and we're met by a couple of guys, different guys. One of the guys that meets us is a guy named Pastor Carrie Miller, who's 83 years old. I like hanging around with men who, you know, you hang around with guys who are 83 years old, and he's a Baptist preacher, and I just hang around, I like hanging around with you. First of all, when you're 63, it's great to hang around with 83-year-old men. You don't want to be the oldest guy in the room, trust me, you know what I mean? But these guys know so much more than I know. I just love to listen to them. I just love to listen to them, you know what I mean? And then I hang out with him for lunch for 2 hours, 2 or 3 hours, and then I go home and see my wife, and I go to sleep for a couple of hours, take a nap, and then I come here. Go figure, you know? I know you young kids think, boy, I'll tell you, I might as well put a gun in my head right now and blow my brains out. Boy, 20 years ago, I'm 10 years sober. 20 years ago, I'm sitting with a guy in a Denny's, some 20-year-old kid at a Denny's, and we had just come from a meeting. It was a great meeting. We're having coffee, and he looks at me, and he says, well, hey, that meeting was great, but what do you guys do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him that I was having the greatest time of my life, that by AA standards, this was like Valhalla, you know what I mean? He wanted to know about when do we go to the Oscars, you know, when do we get on the speedboat, when are we going skiing, you know, and I said, this is Can you believe it? We're here in Denny's having coffee. This is unbelievable, you know? That's my life, you know? And you know what I described to you? That was Saturday. That's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and Friday. Every once in a while, I go to the office. I don't even understand what's going on, you know? I'm a cheap date, you know? And that's four kids, six grandkids, you know? Free. And I want to talk about freedom, and I want to talk about lack of bondage. And so one of the things, so I read in the book, it says, what does it say? It says, I want to talk first about the problem. I'm just going to sort of gloss over the problem. We've talked about it a lot, but I think we're going to, but one of the things today that the preacher, we were talking about with my preacher, and he talked about repetition, how important repetition is. You ever think to yourself when you go to meetings that they're always repeating a lot of stuff? I mean, every time they read this, it's, here they go, the fifth chapter again. Here they go, the traditions again. Here they go, the Lord's Prayer again. Here they go, the Serenity Prayer again. Here we go. And then the guy's talking, they're reading the book. The same stuff, the same deal, the same promises, the same, you know, there's Russell Gunn. He says, I heard him. He said that last week. He said that the week before. He said that, you know, you ever think there must be some sort of problem here? Because if you, let me tell you, there's no problem. Because if you understand the disease of alcoholism, you know, you better pray that this thing is repeated to you over and over and over and over. Because let me tell you something. You know what's being repeated to you over and over again in your mind? When you walk out of here, I'm a piece of shit. I don't deserve to live. I'll never be okay. Because the stuff that's killing you is the same crap that's been going on for 30, 40, 50 years in your life over and over again, and it's nothing new. And it's all the same crap that you're playing over and over again in your mind, and it's killing you, so you better replace it with some other stuff. There ain't nothing new killing you. There's nothing in your life right now that's hurting you that hasn't been doing it to you for the last 30 years. Same crap, same fears, same people, same thinking, same pattern of thinking, same everything. So you better get your ass in front of some people in a meeting as much as possible so you can hear the good stuff. Because when you're by yourself, unless you have a relationship with God, all you're going to be doing is repeating the stuff that's going to lead to your demise. Because that's what this disease wants, your demise. So enough of the fun stuff. Let's get back into this. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't help it. So bad. Okay, well, you know, I take this thing seriously. You know, I've sponsored a lot of people. You know, a lot of them die and everything like that. And, you know, this thing will take you out. And I'm not even thinking about the kids and the grandkids and all that stuff that get hurt and all that sort of stuff because people don't take it seriously. So I do take it seriously. In any event, let's talk about the problem first, because it's important to understand a little bit about the problem before I get into 8 and 9, which really has to do with, hey, here we go. Here you go. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. It's an adventure. Isn't that what you think when you're stuck in traffic and some guy cuts you off and everything says, this is like a flipping adventure here. Isn't that what you think when the check bounces or somebody, you know, tells you, you say, what an adventure. This is unbelievable. Isn't that what you think when somebody steps on your door, does something great, you say, man, this is the greatest, I'm like excited about this stuff, you know, this is cool. You're not there saying, wishing this one was dead and that one is dead, and you don't say things like, well, I'd go to that party, but he's going to be there or she's going to be there. You don't live your life worrying about where you're going to go and what you're going to do because you want to know who's there. You don't say things to people like when they invite you somewhere, you say, you don't say things like, who's going to be there. You don't screen your life to find out who's going to be there to see whether or not you want to go there because some person's going to be there because people dictate your life and live in your brain. You know, you don't do that stuff because that'd be a sad way to live your life, wouldn't it? But I can tell you guys are like cut above. You don't do that. There's some alcoholics that live their lives that way. No, it's true. There are some alcoholics that live their lives always thinking about people on their brain. You know, always thinking night and day, 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking about people. You know, most of the people that, you know, there are alcoholics that stay up till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, that can't go to sleep. And you know what they're thinking about? People. And it's bad thoughts about people and other people. And, you know, they can't stop thinking about them. Not you guys, but I'm trying to school you. Because you're, you know, if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to run into people like this. They're going to feel crummy about themselves, crummy about their lives, and crummy about all this stuff because of people living rent-free in their brains. And they can't stop thinking about them. It's almost like they can't stop drinking. And that's going to be part of the problem. So here's the deal. Here's what it says. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. You know, this is sort of interesting stuff because you start thinking, how do these things link up, like connecting the dots? How does being selfish and self-centered have anything to do with other people? That would think that you're thinking only of yourself. And it's true. It's true. It's total self-involvement. So here's the deal. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. How is selfishness and self-centeredness connected with hating people and not forgiving people and despising people and have all this stuff in your brain? But apparently it is, because this is what they say, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of others and they retaliate. Apparently being selfish and always thinking about yourself without even knowing it, without even being able to stop that deal, you know, is one of the reasons why we're always getting into trouble with people. So stop thinking about yourself. You know what the problem is? It's not only that you can't stop thinking about yourself without his help, but you don't even know you're thinking about yourself when you're thinking about yourself. That's the real problem. That's the real denial. When you are thinking about other people, you think you're not thinking about yourself. Because you think you're thinking about other people. So you don't think you're selfish and self-centered because you're thinking about others. And you don't understand that even when you're thinking about other people, all you're thinking about is yourself. Because you don't know what it's like not to think about yourself, because you've been thinking about yourself all your life. Your entire life is about thinking about yourself, so you wouldn't even know what it was like not to think about yourself. That's why you don't know what the new freedom is. You only know old freedoms. You don't know what the new freedom is, you know? And so let's keep on going. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we variably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later places us in a position to be hurt. Take things personally. We're upsettable. We take things personally. We're sensitive. I told my sponsor, you know the old story, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise, and the alcoholics is an extreme example of self will run riot, whatever the hell that means. I mean, we say whatever that means. Self will run riot. You know, it's we do what we want to do, you know, for our own purposes. Even sometimes when we think we're doing things for others, we're really doing it for ourselves, and we don't even realize that because our motives are mixed. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic extreme example, self-overwhelming right, though he usually doesn't think so. So if you don't think so, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not doing it. It just means that you fit right into the mold of what the alcoholic is. Above everything, we must get rid of self. We must, or it kills us. It doesn't even hurt us. It kills us. So how are you going to get rid of self? So how are you going to do that? I mean, let's say what I'm saying. Let's say this. Here's the problem. Forget about me. Don't make believe. Here's the deal. Let me tell you the truth. This has nothing to do with me. You could have a recording up here reading the book to you. Because all I'm doing, I'm not saying anything this isn't coming out of my brain. This is my experience. I'm mixing this, my experience. But let me tell you what the truth is. I'm just reading the book Alpha. This is our basic text. This is the one thing we all agree. This is the program. You know how people say, well, I'm working the program. This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you disagree with this, I'm not going to take it personally because it doesn't hurt my feelings because it has nothing to do with me. You're just disagreeing with Alcoholics Anonymous. But if I'm here to do the steps and I'm talking about the steps and I'm going to talk about the book, I'm not going to talk about my person. I'm going to talk about the book. And the book says, it says, we must get rid of the selfishness we must or it kills us. You know, so how are you going to get rid of that? You know what the book says? It says, God makes that possible. Only he makes that possible. It says, it seems no way of getting rid of it. We had to have God's help. That's what it says. I'm not saying that. Don't get mad at me. You can get mad at me. You know, and you know, I go out and they say, well, those people walked out on you and they called you names. I said, well, I'm not upset. Why should I be upset? It says nothing with me. I'm just reading from the book. They're just mad at Alcoholics Anonymous. They're just mad at Bill Wilson. They're mad at Jesus. They're mad at whatever. They're mad at anybody who's telling them anything about God because they don't want to go there. They're just a bunch of alcoholics that don't want to do it. They're just not willing. It's okay. I'm not mad. It's just, you know, God bless them, you know. I wish them the best. They will be pounded into submission or drink again or die until they figure this thing out and they come in with a different attitude. Why should I get upset? I'm sleeping at night. I'm just the watchman. I'm just giving out the message. I'm just talking about what I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. That's what the talk. Should I get upset about it? This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And now I'm going to skip over. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things to follow, because I want to ultimately get to this part. I want to ultimately get to the promises, because it's after 8 and 9 that the promises, you know, he says new freedom, new happiness. I want to get to the part that says, learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women, whatever description, is a moving and fascinating adventure. I want to get into the new freedom. I want to get into the part where they talk about fear of people and of economic insecurity leave us. I want to get into that deal. Because all this is connected. The 8 and 9 step is all connected. And the 4th step, too, all the way up through 9, because the 8th step comes from the 4th step, resentments. And then the 9th step has to do with the action we take. All that is connected, ultimately, to how well you're going to realize the new freedom and the new happiness. Because I think it's important. I think the most, you know, what does it say about the steps? It says this. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, right? It says, if you do what we do, you'll get what we got. And then it says, what does it say about being ready? If you want what we have entirely ready. What is it? What's the deal? I can't remember. I'm 63. To get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So the truth is your readiness is now, you're not going to do this thing because you're a nice person. You're not going to do this thing because you want to do it. You're not going to do this person because, you know, you think I'm right. You know, there's a whole group of people think I'm wrong. You're going to do this thing because you see somebody or something that you want. You're going to do this thing because you want to lose the 50 pounds. You're going to do this thing because you want the car. You're going to do this thing because you want what we have. And so the bottom line is at the end, the carrot at the end of this thing is the new freedom and the new happiness. The carrot at the end of this thing is losing fear of people. The carrot at the end of this thing is not having a mind that's constantly thinking about other people, bad thoughts about other people. The carrot in this deal is being able to be in almost any situation and feeling good about yourself and not comparing your insides with other people's outsides and feeling like a piece of shit. The carrot in this deal is not constantly comparing yourself to other people and coming up short. And the carrot in this thing is not having to feel that you have to prove yourself to other people. Hey, the carrot in this thing is being able to come here and talk to people without a script. Because you're not sitting around saying, I wonder what they think about me, or should I say this, or should I say that. It allows you to talk a lot faster. Because you don't have to run it through the filter of, should I say this, or should I say that, or what will this sound like. Well, the carrot in this thing is being in love, learning to love yourself. Not in an egotistic sense, but understanding that you're justified. There's a reason for you to be alive on the planet Earth. And no matter what you say, it's designed to basically help people find God. And it's a good thing. And to feel good about yourself and understand that there's a reason you should be alive. And you're fulfilling God's purpose. And you're staying close to Him and doing His will. And feeling decent about yourself. And you don't drink because you feel like I felt when I was talking to that guy. And he said, what do you do for fun? I said, I'm having a great time. Instead of constantly having to roam the earth to find that thing that's going to make you feel okay when you feel crappy. And if that's what you want, then this is the deal. This is the connection. And if you're looking for anything else, it's not going to do it because you've tried before you got here. You guys ain't spring chickens. You've tried everything. You tried the psychiatry. You tried everything else. It didn't work. When we sincerely took such a position, the position of having a relationship with God, all sorts of remarkable things followed. It's pretty remarkable for alcoholics when they use fear of people. And they start feeling good about themselves. And they start feeling that there's a reason they should be on the planet Earth. And they don't have to prove anything to anybody anymore. And they can be open and transparent with it. It's a pretty remarkable thing for alcoholics who feel crap about themselves, want to hide out in a cave and isolate and thumbsuck and cry babies. You know, pretty remarkable things. Let me tell you something. It happens to 1 out of 100. It happens to 1 out of 100. Many call, but few are chosen. We had a new employer being all powerful. Not a higher power, it's the highest power. He provided what we needed if, you ready for this? Here it is. If we kept close to Him and performed His work well. That's the M, staying close to Him and Him with a capital H. Staying close to God and performed His work well. So don't let anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous tell you that God has nothing to do with this, or that guy talks too much about God, or that's the only thing this thing has to do with. That's why it's written throughout all the steps. That's why it says at the end of the steps, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's why it says it's going to kill you. We need to have God's help. The whole thing is about God. The 8th step is about God, through and through. The 5th step is about God. It's all about God. He provided what he needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Do you know what His work is for you? You know He's got work for you. You know something, He's got work. You know something, the car's not important. The husband's not important. The wife's not important. None of that stuff is, you know what's important? What's important is the work He's got for you. You better perform his work well if you want this stuff. You don't know who he is? Well, you better figure out who he is. And once you figure out who he is, you better find whoever you got to find in your life. You know, it says God will show you how to create the fellowship of grace. You better find those people in your life that are not dragging you down or pointing you in the wrong direction. You better find the people in your life that are going to help you find him, your him, and find out what work he has for you to perform, because that's the only thing that's going to relieve you of this deal. And you want something? If you don't like that, I'm not going to get upset, because it's not, it doesn't have anything to do with me. It just means you don't like this big book. You're not rejecting me. You're just rejecting what the program is. Just don't tell people that you're doing AA. Just don't go out there and say, well, I've been doing AA, because you'd be lying. You understand? You get it? Because it's a program of rigorous honesty. Let's be honest. Just say, I'm doing AA, except for that part on page 63. Just cancel that part out, okay? Established on such a footing, that footing... We became less and less, you know, if you don't read this stuff, you don't read it over and over again, and you don't listen to this stuff, you don't have people beat it into you, you know what happens? You can almost fake it, do AA light, and make believe you're doing it, which is what alcoholics do. They say things like the check's in the mail, and it's not. They really meant to do it. They lie to themselves and other people. They just make excuses and say shit. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life, how we could help other people. You know, when more and more you become interested in contributing to life and helping other people, you're getting away from selfishness and self-centeredness. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. You know, I was thinking to myself, one of the things I recognize about this selfishness and self-centeredness is that no matter where I am in my life, certainly before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, all I did was always think about myself. You know, even when I was thinking about other people, myself, I would be right in there in the midst of that deal. You know, I'm just so involved. I am so self-involved. It is so much about me. I am so much in the picture. Even when I'm thinking about helping you, I'm so much there. It's so hard to get rid of myself. And what's happened to me, I think one of the things that's happened to me in the last 30 years because of trying to work this thing, probably poorly, you know, and having a better relationship with God, what it's done for me is I think instead of 100% of the time always thinking about myself and thinking about my problems, it's all about me. You know, I was at a meeting, I think I told you guys this once, and, you know, sometimes you see it. It's so amazing. I was at a meeting where a guy was talking, a wonderful guy. He's been sober for many years. And his 17-year-old son just died of brain cancer. You know, I got four kids and six grandkids. And thank God they're healthy. And I got to tell you something, that has actually never happened to me, to have a child, and it's his only child. And he's been in AA for over 20 years. So here's a guy who's been in AA for over 20 years. You understand what I'm saying? And his only child dies in front of him of brain cancer. You know something? Not only don't I know what that's like. Now, there's a lot of things I do know. There's a lot of disappointments I've had in my life. So I've suffered a lot of things. A lot of things happened that I do know what it's like. I can't even look this guy in the eye and say, I know how you feel. I can't say that. And I want to tell you the truth, I don't even want to imagine how he feels, you know, because that would be almost, in a sense, it would almost be, I'd start getting morbid and crazy about, I'd start doing what alcoholics do, get crazy and morbid and nuts about something that didn't even happen to me. You know, the wrongdoings of others real, and next thing you know, I'd be drinking because my imaginary son died, you know what I mean? I'll get myself all geeked up and feeling sorry for myself, because I'm so self-involved. I can think about what happened to him and what would happen if it happened to me and how would I feel and everything like that. It hurts me. Next thing you know, I'm in a bad mood because, you know, my son's going to die. And what am I going to do if I... That's the way alcoholics think. Because we're selfish and self-centered, because somehow somebody dies on the other end of the earth and we feel bad. We're pissed off because it has something to do with us. It's like, I don't know. It's already happened to us, or it's going to happen to us, or, you know, I don't know. I can't explain it. We're just crazy, you know, but... But the bottom line is that I'm so self-involved. It's so hard for me, really, truly, to put myself in another person's mind. You know, even if I hurt somebody, if I hurt somebody, or I damage somebody, or I steal money from, listen, if you hurt me, you know how they say, you have people say, you need to get in touch with your feelings? Okay, I can, listen, no alcoholic needs to get in touch with his feelings, okay? That'll kill you, okay? No, let me put it this way. If by getting in touch with your feelings, it's understanding in a fourth step and a fifth step concept, why you act and why you do the things you do and what's really behind it, and seeing that you're not really jealous, you're in fear, and you're not really this because you're in fear, and actually getting down to seeing why you feel the way you do and what it's hitting, and admitting to yourself, you know, I am scared to be alone. I am scared that nobody will like me. I am to honestly admit yourself what your problems are, so you can work on having God lift it. If that's the kind of if that's what they mean by getting up in touch with, but I don't think that's what the getting to. If that's what they mean, then it's okay. Okay, but I'll tell you, there's one thing I've got down pat as an alcoholic. I am always in touch with my feelings. As a matter of fact, that's the only thing I'm in touch with: my feelings, how I feel. And so this guy's talking about his 17-year-old son and how he was talking like in a meeting. And what happened when he died and how he felt and how he was mad at God and everything like that. And the next person that spoke, without missing a beat, said, I'm having a lot of problems with cookies. Seriously, as serious as I am right now, he's saying, I've been eating too many cookies lately. I don't think there was a two-second lap because she was waiting to tell the group about her cookie problem. And I understood. That she didn't even hear what he was talking. He spoke for 15 minutes about how his son died and how he was standing by his son's bed. And I understood that the lady, and I'm not putting her down because I got the same thing, there but for the grace of God goes with me. I understood that that everybody in the room was focused on him and what he was saying because it was so powerful. And I understood that she didn't hear a word. I understood that she didn't hear a word he said because all she was thinking about is her cookie problem. So it wasn't even that she was putting him down. She didn't even hear what he was talking about. She wasn't, because she was just waiting, biding her time, like, when's he going to be done so I can tell him about the cookie problem I have? And you know something? That, you know what that is? That's the same disease you guys have. That's what you got. That's alcoholism. And she was as sober as you are. She's as sober as I am. He was as, that's the disease you have. Where you can go to a meeting and sit there for an hour and hear only 2% of what's actually being said. Because you got so much other shit going on in your mind, it's all about you. And so I think what's going on with me, and I'll just say what's happened to me, is in doing these steps and working these steps, I've gone, instead of somebody who is thinking 100% about me, I've gotten to the point where I only think about me 97% of the time. No, really, I believe, this has happened to me, that once a day, for about 3 or 4 seconds, I actually can feel another person's pain and see it from their point of view. You know what I mean? And completely forget myself. I mean, I think it's like a little, maybe it's 5% sometimes, maybe sometimes, whatever it is, you know, I think my higher power, the person I particularly call my higher power, I think he understood that completely. I think he completely understood how other people felt and how they were feeling and looked at it from his point of view, which is why he was able to be compassionate and have love for the people. Because when you only see it from your point of view, then people's actions, bad, good, or anything, piss you off. Because they're affecting you, because they're hurting you, because you don't like it. But when you can see it from their point of view, and you can understand what's going on, and you can empty yourself, okay, then, you know, you don't take things personally. Because you can feel their pain, and you can understand what they're doing. And that's an impossible thing for alcoholics to do when we're so self-involved. And so we go through all these exercises, and they seem so cumbersome. You know, you're doing these things. And why are we doing it? Why do we do it? Here's the great thing. I would just want to read these two parts. And here's, first of all, in chapter 6, this is before they get to step 5. You know, step 5, 6, 7, 8, and all that stuff is in the chapter into action. So it's all consistent from beginning to end that it's all about God and your relationship with God. You know, at the very end of the book, it says, when it gets to working with others, it says, let no man say it needs his wife back. Or his job back, right? All he needs is his relationship with God. Job or no job, wife or no wife, as long as he trusts God and clean house. It's all about God. So here we go. It's all consistent in chapter 6. We have been, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? This whole thing from 4 through 9 is about inventorying, finding out what's going on with ourselves, trying to lock down what that selfishness and self-centeredness looks like, what it looks like in us. We don't get it all at once. It may take years and years, and even, I'm telling you, 30 years, I barely see it. I barely see it. I'm not saying, gee, I finally got it now. I'm saying, whoa, I barely see it. You know, it's just a little bit better. So having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. Did you know that? You probably thought you were just trying to psychologically figure out yourself. You tried to figure out you're just going to try to make your life better. You're just trying to figure out you want to feel better, right? You know why you think this is all about your feeling better? You know why you go to meetings and you say, you know, I don't feel... You know why you go to meetings and say, I feel crummy today? You know why you say, I feel crummy today? Because how you feel is important to you. You know why you say, I really need a meeting? I have to have a meeting. I don't feel good today. This one disappointed. You know why you talk about yourself a lot? Because that's the only thing you care about. You know why? Because you're totally self-involved. Because all you think about is yourself. That's why you go to meetings, to talk about yourself and to feel better yourself. Because all you do is think about yourself. That's why you go to meetings. You don't see that? You don't get that? It's all you. It's all about you. Having made a personal inventory, watch out. And you know what's going to kill you? That. Get rid of that. How do I do it? Well, I don't know. You better read this book. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. That's what the 4th, 5th, and 6th, and 7th step, and 8th and 9th step is about. Here it goes. Now, you're done with the 8th step. I'm not going to tell you how to do the 8th step. I'm not going to tell you how to do the 9th step. You got to read the book. What am I saying to tell you to do the 8th step? You know, these steps are all simple and easy. It's just difficult for us to get into it. Because you want to, if somebody wants to do the 8th step, if somebody wants to do the 4th step, I could sit here and teach like a teacher and show a chart. And, you know, I could tell you, but if somebody wanted to do this, if you really want to do it, I promise you, I have never seen an alcoholic who wants to do the 4th step, wants to do the 5th step, wants to do the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th step that can't figure out how to do it. Never seen that in my life. The only people that can't figure out how to do it are the people that don't want to do it in the first place. And the people that don't want to do it, they don't want to do it because they don't want what it will give them. Or they're scared of what they're getting involved in. But once you say, I want that thing, they'll grab a sponsor, they'll go to meetings, they'll go to step in, until they'll read the book until they figure out how to do it. Okay? So it's not my job. I'm not going to tell you, this is how you do the ACE. I mean, you know, it's pretty clear. If you read the book, it's pretty clear how to do it. But if you're not sure, go up to your sponsor and say, okay, how do I do it? It's a list. Okay? It comes from the 4th step. How do you do the 9th step? You talk with your sponsor. Okay, this one, I did this, that, and other thing. I'm thinking, how do I make amends there? You talk to him, you talk to other people. And they tell you how to do the amends. It's real simple. Okay? The real problem is doing it. Okay? And here's what it says once we're done doing it, okay? Because I want to talk to you about connecting the dots so you see where it's going to get you. Because if you can see what you're going to get out of this, man, I'll tell you, if I said to some guy in here and he believed it, you do an eighth and you finish your 8th and 9th step and I'll give you $100,000, I'll bet you I wouldn't have a problem. I'll bet you there'd be no problem with the 8th or 9th steps in here, you know? You know, even if he said, how do I do it? I said, I'm not going to tell you. That's the whole point. I'll bet you he'd be rip, raping, and robbing to figure out how to do that, baby. An alcoholic will call me. You know, we're excuseaholics. An alcoholic will call me up, and I said, you're not the mean. He says, well, I can't make it. You know, my car is broken. I said, so in other words, you're telling me if I had $100,000 for you, but you had to be down there in a half an hour, you'd say, I'm sorry, I can't be there. He says, no, he'd get a gun and he'd flag down a taxi, shoot the guy, and take the car and come on down. He'd get there, you know. Here's after the 8th and 9th step. Here it is. It says, at the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. This is why we're doing it. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in and of itself. You ready for this? Our real purpose. You know what the real purpose for the 8th and 9th step? Here it is again. Is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God. There he is again. And the people about us. It's all about him. It's all about him. So let me ask you, if you really want to do this, who should you be hanging around? Who should you be hanging around? What kind of people should you be looking for? What kind of books should you be reading? What should you be focused on? What should you be focused on? What should you be focused on if you really want to do this stuff? I mean, if you're reading this stuff. I mean, you could do these steps until the cows come home. You know what's the saddest thing in the world? People that do these steps, you know, like, you know, I went to college, you know, I went to law school, I went to all this stuff. I'm an academic. You know, I know how to take tests. I know how to pass tests. You know, I know how to do that, and speak to a jury and all that stuff. I can go through the whole thing and pass it. I can talk to the guy at the treatment center and saying, I've got a sponsor, I did my 4 steps. I can do it. You know what's the saddest thing in the world? To get through the whole thing and do it and miss the entire deal. And then go back into that crap out there they call life and just start hunting for those things that you think are going to make you feel better. And those are the guys that drink and kind of put a bullet in their head or can't quite make it. This whole thing is designed to completely transform you as a human being into a royal priesthood. And to your focus is so different. Man, can you imagine? How can you walk through this and do this stuff and actually do this stuff and have the same focus and have that same things that are valuable to you before you started the process than when you got to the end? Do you remember what you focused on before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous? Do you remember what was the most important thing in your life before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous? You remember all the things you thought about before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous? How can you get the end of this thing reading this stuff and be the same and be focused on the same stuff? I mean, you can tell me till the cows come home you got a sponsor and you did the steps. You did nothing. Zero. So don't talk to me about how you still feel bad and you're still a thumb-sucking crybaby and this thing ain't working for you when you haven't done anything because you haven't surrendered your life and your will over to him utterly. And you're pissed off at guys that talk about basically what's in this book. Just say to yourself, I ain't doing this. And be honest with yourself. I don't like the God thing. I don't think I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stay exactly where I am. I'll just hang out there and you do AA light and just not drink. And don't complain when the promises don't hit you. And you still have fear of people. And your life is still a wreck, you know, and unmanageable. Don't complain about it then. You know, so that's what this thing is. It sets you up for the point where you can be free, you know, free of the bondage of worrying about people and places and things and getting in and hatred and resentment. And you know, I've been married for I'm going to talk briefly about marriage for a second. I've been married to the same gal. God gave me the perfect wife. He really did. I've been married. No, she's not here. That's why I can talk about her, and she won't listen to the tape. Okay? You know, and don't you call her up, Rachel. Tell her, listen. No, she did give me the perfect wife, and she's a tough lady, you know. She's a tough gal, I don't know how people, I do a lot of divorces, you know, I got guys and gals that come to my office and they're getting divorced, and I ask them, and we go into why they're getting divorced, and they tell me the reasons. It's their third marriage, or their fourth marriage, or their 17th marriage, it doesn't matter, they tell me the reasons. And almost every reason they tell me has happened in my life, in my marriage. And I'm very close with my clients. They all know I'm an AA. You know, listen, you don't, you know, that's the deal. The part of my life is not being scared about who I am and what I am. So I'm telling you, the first session they're with me, they're paying me money. They know I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. They know I've been in 30 years. They know I know about codependency. We're talking about their life and who they are. I'm slicing them. I'm dicing them. If they walk out the door and say, I don't need this crap, I'm not paying you for spiritual stuff or anything, that's fine. Let them walk out the door now. I don't want any problems with whack jobs because, you know, the one thing that I've learned is that I don't need to surround myself with crazy people, even if they're paying me money. It just ain't worth it because my peace of mind is more important than being with a crazy person. But you want to know something? The ones that stay are remarkable. The ones that stay are remarkable. They're like bring me, they remember my birthday. They bring me presents. You know, they call me up on the phone. They write me emails. You stay by the ones that stay. Are remarkable because they have a whole different way of looking at things because they're never going to make it to an AA meeting. I'm the only AA meeting they see. You know what I mean? And what I realize is when I talk to these people is they'll tell me things why they're dumping a relationship or getting a divorce or why their husband got a divorce. It's no different. There's no different than what I've been through with my wife. You know, well, he's always doing this or she's always doing that or he says this or she does that or, you know what I mean? They're just dumping relationships of 20 years with 4 kids and everything like that and doing this because they're frustrated because of nothing, everything that their husband and their wife did to them, my wife has done to me or I've done to her. You know what I mean? It just doesn't, but it's like I want to say, so, but why would you get a divorce? Well, she yelled at me that night. So what does that have to do? I mean, the ability to get along with people that are screwed up. I mean, they're all screwed. We're all screwed up. We all have tempers. You know, we all sometimes act out and say stupid things and goofy things. Me too. We all do. We all will. Doesn't matter, you know. The ability to live life in such a way so that it may affect you for the moment or for the... First of all, to live life in such a way where that stuff doesn't even affect you. It doesn't even affect you. Somebody yells and screams or is bad in a bad mood and you don't take it personally. Or even if you do take it personally for a second or two, to be able to forgive them and not hold a grudge makes for a 30-year marriage. It makes for a 30-year marriage. I got these guys... I'm taking my extra 10 minutes. I sponsor guys that a lot of guys I sponsor are married. And you may find this hard to believe, but they have marital problems. Their wives are not happy with them for whatever reason, you know? And what happens is they'll come and they'll watch my interaction with my wife and my kids, and my wife will say something to me or whatever it is, and they'll say to me, they'll look at me. They like watch me. They can't believe it because my wife will say things, whatever she says, it doesn't even matter. And they'll look at me and I don't react. I don't get mad. I don't do anything. You know, I say, you know, and they'll say to me every once in a while, they'll say, did you hear what your wife said? And I said, no, what? You know, I'm not even paying attention. You know what I mean? And even if I'm paying attention, I said, yeah, so what's the problem? You know, and they're amazed because you see the way they live their lives, them's fighting words. It's my way of the, you see, just a one sentence is enough. This marriage is over. One sentence, you know, that's it. 20 years, I'm out of here. And, you know, they'll say hear my wife say something, and I'll say, you want me to grab a turkey for dinner? What do you mean? You know, it's like, and then the next thing that happens, we're talking and everything like it didn't even happen. And you know what they're amazed at? They're saying, how do you do that? How do you do that? Where somebody can say something to you that seems hurtful and it doesn't even bother you. You just keep on, how do you do that? You know, alcoholics can't do that. We can't let things go. We can't let things slide. We got to have the last word. Nobody, hey, you ain't talking to me like, who do you think, do you have any idea who you're dealing with? You don't know who you're screwing with. You better, you know, wait, right? That's an alcoholic, right? So with that kind of personality, how do you expect to be married more than a week? You know what I mean? Why are you bitching and moaning why you can't stay married or why you can't have a decent relationship when you're a whack job? Who's going to have relationships, you know, right? So that's what these steps do. They allow you to have decent relationships with people. They can be crazy and you can have a decent relationship. Or you can decide, I'm not going to hang out with this crazy person. But you don't have to let it affect your life. Your life can be like that. You don't have to be, at the end of the day, the sum total craziness of all the nut jobs you run into. You could be as well at 8 o'clock in the morning as you are at 8 o'clock at night, no matter who you run into. And avoid the crazy people. You understand? That's what the eighth and ninth step is all about, to teach you how to do that thing. Isn't that easier? And then you don't have to drink. You don't have to be sitting in a bar drinking over your wife, your husband, or your boss. You don't have to be doing that stuff and being restless, irritable, discontented. Does that make any sense? Okay, so next week we talk about 10 and 11. Thank you.